This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh, you did some voices?
Yeah, I was a talking snake.
Oh, now you're going to talk into another microphone.
That's right.
It's pretty much your day, right?
It really is. Yeah, that's only my day. The Andy Greenwald podcast went up today.
Oh, nice. I'll have to listen to that, I think.
Yeah, I did a podcast with Andy Greenwald from Grantland, and he was really nice.
Well, that's good. So he just writes mean things.
Well, I don't think I don't really see him, especially now that I've talked to him, I don't really think he's mean. I think he's just...
Listen, Andy, I have a name, and it's not Trekker.
Oh, he's mad because Matt's mad because Andy called him Trekker. No, actually,
That's totally fine.
I think Andy's a pretty fair and balanced writer, and in a world of people trying to show how clever they are by writing the meanest, craziest metaphors to talk about how people suck, like, I don't feel like he does that, and so I really like him a lot.
I enjoy his writing.
I really, really, really
I enjoy
like
the
him
folks
lot.
Over at Grantland.
I don't think I've gone to that site. What is the site?
Grantland. It's Bill Simmons' website.
Bill Simmons is like a sports
writer. He's a writer primarily. So what he did was he started a website to sort of focus on writing, like long form articles and stuff like that, like old newspaper writing, sort of like grow young talent and stuff like that. It's a really good site just for reading on your iPad or whatever. And they also
about my computer.
They have podcast networks and stuff for your computer.
Am I on phone?
You can do it on the phone. Cool. Sure. Mm-hmm. Do it anywhere, Jonah.
A Google Nexus.
Yeah, that'll work. That'll work.
Palm Trio. 750?
Not going to get it.
Magazine.
Not gonna get it.
Can I read it on a magazine?
You can... No.
Can
Sometimes Bill writes for ESPN the magazine.
Do we talk about how my Trio 750, that it had just been in a box for like 7 years, and I was going through stuff, and the battery was next to the phone, so I popped the battery into the phone, and the phone booted up?
And I was able to go... Time trip.
I was able to go through... Yeah, I went through and found all these old files, like all these old... documents between Furman and I had for like bits we were doing and stuff.
Wow.
Jeez. I mean, it's still
pictures.
No
dick pics.
No dick pics. They would have had to be ASCII dick pics,
but they were probably some of those.
No, actually, I guess that's not true because it did have web capability, so it could. And actually, that was the color
it
one.
Had
that,
a camera,
that
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I take that back. It would not have been ASCII dicks. It could have been actual. It could have been actual photographic.
Phone
dicks.
I met you with.
Yeah, the 750. Yeah, that's right. The 750. Man, I thought that phone was so cool. And then as I was holding it, I was like, this thing's a goddamn brick. Like
Remember the Palm Pre when that was going to be a thing?
Yeah, I loved the Palm. The Palm Pre was actually not a terrible phone.
I didn't care for it. Did you review that on Attack of the Show?
That was the first thing that I ever reviewed, actually. I did not give it a great review because it felt really plasticky to me. Like it felt
Yet
like a
Bernardo
toy.
Bernardo still bought one.
Well... What it was the first review that I ever did for Attack of the Show, and I didn't officially work there yet. I think that was just sort of guest reviewing.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so Bruce
hated it.
Yeah, Bruce was cool with it. He didn't think it was that bad. But I was like, you know, it just feels very plasticky to me, and I don't love the phone. And he goes,
those are the adjectives we would
use. And also
use.
The the keypad, all the numbers were super close together, so yeah. there was a lot of like accidental mashing.
Yeah, it's funny. The first thing I reviewed on Attack of the Show was the Motorola Admiral, which is a phone that just touted its keyboard, and I thought the keyboard was great.
You liked the keyboard.
And I don't remember what I gave the phone, but
well, I didn't give the phone a high rating, and then apparently Bruce was like, "Oh yeah, the Palm people weren't too happy," but you know, that's your right as a reviewer. Yeah. Like you can't.
I pissed off. It's a big company that begins with an A. Asus.
Oh.
I pissed off Asus.
What was the thing?
Shitty review of a tablet they had. It was a hunk of junk. I hated
it's
the
a
tablet.
Hunk of junk.
It was
old
terrible.
Hunk of, did you do the review like an old dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's old hunk of junk.
It's a hunk of junk. You like an iPad.
Yeah.
And then they weren't too happy.
Now, did Asus ask you why Jonas didn't do At Midnight the other night?
Did they?
They didn't ask.
They didn't?
Because
they didn't
see
have the
future.
Time machine?
They didn't have a,
to do it?
They didn't have a time machine to 3 days
before the taping?
Do you want to
talk about
it? We could talk about it.
Do you not want to talk about
it? No, we could talk about
it. This is all you guys have been talking about for 5 days, so
not
you should
to
talk
each other.
About it. Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
this
just,
is all I've
we
been talking
stew.
About to the
we
both of you.
Stew. We always do.
Guys, let's hear it out. Here, I'll mediate, like I have been. But let's start with the whole, let's start with this situation. We had a special
from the start of
his tan. I'm sorry, yeah. Gym first,
yeah.
Then tan, then laundry. But let's see. At midnight, you know, our show's back. We're all ready to go. We book Weird Al on. You know, big get for us. We're all big Weird Al fans in
yep.
the show, and we're like, who's gonna work great with Weird Al?
Mm-hmm.
So of course we think. Jonah's going to be great.
Well, we should put Jonah on because we want Al to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the show works best when people know each other.
And let's get someone else who's good with Al, who's also very good with friends
Brian
with Jonah.
Posehn.
Brian Posehn. There he is. We did it. Home run booking.
Yeah.
You can't get any better than this.
Yeah.
Then I get a text message. From I think we're all gung-ho. We wrote a special question for Jonah. Everything's ready to be there. Then I get a text message from...
By the way, just to preface this even further, like one more preface.
Yes.
Jonah and I had a falling out. And this is the first time that we're really talking about
this.
This is the first time.
Yeah.
Well, face-to-face.
Face-to-face.
This is a... Let me re-preface that.
Okay. I knew you guys could hear it in the earbuds, that tense.
this weekend... this weekend... they got into it pretty good, the two of them. I'm talking to the audience right now, not to you guys.
Oh, okay.
Calm down.
Should we take a powder?
Just hang out. they got into it, and here's the deal. I know when I get a phone call from Chris Hardwick after 9 p.m., I know it's not good news. Now, when I get a phone call from Jonah after 9 p.m., it's usually like, what the fuck are you doing? Come on out.
The night's just starting.
Yeah. So Chris calls me. I missed the call. I was washing my car. I like to treat the Volvo right. Christmas call. I'm like, I better fucking call him back. Call him back. First thing Chris said, I said, hey, how's it going? You talked to Jonah yet? And I go, whoa. Nope. What's happening? I think he's off in... I think he was in
DC,
Philly.
You were
in DC,
yeah.
Whatever. Doing a show, doing a meltdown show. And I hadn't talked to him yet. What's going on, Chris? He's not doing the show. He canceled the show. And I was like, oh, man. He's like, wait till you hear why he canceled the show.
Well, go.
Okay. So I go, I don't why did he cancel the show? He's going to do Marin's IFC show. And I, in my head, here's what I think immediately. Good for Jonah. I said, oh, he probably really wanted to do that.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But which is totally fine.
Yeah.
I suspect that this entire time you have felt like it was that I didn't want you to pursue your new dream, which is now acting.
Mm-hmm.
Which it wasn't before. This is a relatively new thing. Like in the last 6 months,
it's always been the case. It's been that's a reason I left the soup was to have time because I wasn't able to go on.
I thought you left the soup to write. I thought you were going to leave the soup so you could write and do stand up.
No. I mean, the stand up was there, but it was I was trying to go on auditions and I was kind of pissing off the soup people just because it was like, hey, I got another audition, and then I would just not go, and it was kind of starting to really bum me out. And you know, I've been trying to do that stuff, and I've been, you know, workshopping with Pat Healy a bunch the past few years and stuff. And it was it was a thing where like I finally made the decision upon leaving Soup. I was like, you know, I got some extra money from the Bing commercial. I'm going to go head on into this. And so I've been going to like auditions like regularly, like, you know, like one or two a week for the past year or so.
Yeah.
And I've gotten close. I got real close to, I was like one of two guys up for a Comedy Central pilot. And then I was like tested for it, and it was like down to the wire, and then I went to the other guy, and I got close on a like a, as a buddy, I got tested for another thing. So it's like that's been the process of the past year.
Well, and you know that that's the next step before you start booking things is that you get close.
Yeah.
Because usually the actual hiring, when you're like the last two or three people before you, that means you're good enough to get the job.
Yeah.
The hiring is usually some bullshit thing that has nothing to do with you. It's a political decision or, oh, that guy already worked for us once before.
Or too tall. Sometimes that's
sometimes
it.
Sometimes that. Yeah. So usually the very
our
last...
Our lead's 5'6".
Usually the very last step is just out of your control. But if you're in the game enough, then it'll start tipping and then you'll be that guy that gets picked all the time.
Yeah.
You're right at the finish line, which means that you're going to start... booking more stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, it's what I wanted to do. Then like I was talking to a guy when I first started doing stand up, I like was telling a guy at an open mic, I was like, yeah, I really want to act too. He's like, fucking like piece of like just started shitting on me, saying like it's like you don't respect stand up. You think stand up's gonna get you to be an actor? I was like, no, I like stand up.
Why would Jessel Nick say that?
This is before you ever showed up. This is oh god, who was this guy? Darren Boyler. and so I kind of felt embarrassed to tell anybody about it for a long time, but I was still doing stuff to where like, you know, I was like the Super Deluxe videos was like, that was like probably some of the funnest stuff I had, or just acting in the Web Soup videos when I did that. So that was, yeah. So it's not necessarily a new thing. It's just a thing that I've finally gotten to a point of feeling okay and comfortable with like saying out loud, like the idea of the want. And not being embarrassed of the world.
And you shouldn't be. And I think it's fantastic that you found the thing that you want to do. And I 100% support it. The problem that I have.
Yes.
Here we go.
Is that you commit to things and then they are disposable to you.
Yeah.
That you... We found out... So you're supposed to tape the show Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
We got this information after hours on Friday. And Monday was a holiday. It was MLK Day.
Yes.
So it put... production in a really bad position because none of the agents or managers were working, so there it was, we were just scrambling like, fuck, who can we call, like, who do we know that knows Al, who do we know, and so you know, luckily I think you know, Bart said, someone said, maybe Tom Lennon, someone said, oh, so let's see if Aukerman's available, so we were able to get Aukerman the next day, and so that totally worked out. But I have felt like for a long time that we sort of have this thing, this sort of unspoken thing, that you do stuff with me or us that you'll go, yeah, I'll do that. But if something cooler comes along, I am going to bail on you and go do that thing. And so I tried to explain, even as upset as I was the other night, I'm not trying to be a dick. It really hurts my feelings because I feel disposable. I feel like what we do is disposable until something cooler comes along, that there was never a question in your mind that you'd be like, well, fuck yeah, I'm gonna go do this other show. And I don't even care that it wasn't that it was Mark's show. I mean, I did Mark's show, it was fucking great.
Yeah.
And I know that getting to work with Bobcat and Jerry Stahl and Mark, I mean, it's a fucking great, it's a great show.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just sort of feel like there was never a question in your mind. And you even said, you go, well, my agent said it's better for my acting career. And that fucking, ugh, that was like twisting a knife. Like, really? I don't know. It just, that to me.
That was me projecting onto, you know, that was a move off to the side to get away from blame.
I know that this is what you want to do, but I also feel like that many, many, many times, you know, that there are commitments that you just don't, they just seem like you could take them or leave them. And to me, and I don't know how you feel, Matt, but to me, I feel like, you know, I don't know, that it's probably more important to honor the commitments to your friends and not hang them out to dry the last minute. And it's happened a lot.
Yeah.
It's really happened a lot.
And I'll tell you this, like I said before, the times where, like what you said, like I go to do something cooler. For me, it's never if it's cooler. All the decisions I've made since getting into this stuff have been specifically to like go for the more creatively fulfilling job. I was at the Rotten Tomato show. I wasn't happy with it, but it was a good year and a half long gig of me just getting work check every week. But then you like said you should go work at Web Soup, which had 8 episodes at the time, and I left that job.
I had to talk you into doing that.
Yeah. And I left it, and like it was the best decision I ever made. And that's like kind of like, you know, that's what got me into this headspace of like, I can't go wrong if I go and if I follow the more creatively fulfilling path.
But it's hard for your, it's hard when, it's hard to be in my position where I keep going like, oh, I want to, you know, I want to do as much stuff with Jonah as possible and essentially have you say to me, this other thing's more creatively fulfilling than your thing, so I'm going to go do this even though I already committed to you. Like, I hear what you're saying, and yeah. I know you don't mean it as a dig.
Yeah.
But it still is like, oh, man, that stings.
Well, it's not because it's coming from, you know, the perspective of, like, this thing is, like, to you, it's, like, this stuff is very creatively fulfilling. For me, I have this idea of what I want to do, and I'm trying my best to navigate that within, like, my powers and you know, the idea of, like, of like going to this path. It's you know, I wasn't, so the idea that I couldn't do the midnight show because of that thing, it was tough. It was a really tough decision. It was like, you know,
I don't
like,
think it was that tough.
It was tough because it's like, you know, I was going to be surrounded by like my childhood hero and one of my like favorite comedians, and it was very tough, but I feel it was the right decision for the stuff I wanted.
I know, but that's the thing is that I think at the core of this really sweet guy is a very selfish guy who is just like, and I feel like you don't take responsibility for things where you're like, no, it's not my, the production said it wasn't, I didn't, what? Me,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, oh, the flight got, it wasn't me. I'm like, well, you should have taken an earlier flight. You know, like it, I feel like at the core of it, you're making selfish decisions and, but you don't want to accept the responsibility for it. Like, for instance, if we had had more than, you know, no work days notice, I probably would have been like, you know, if that's your dream, go do that. We at least have a few days to try to fill in this slot. It's usually, it always happens last minute. So we're all like, oh, fuck, what do we do? You know, like, it hangs us out to dry a lot of the time. And usually it's, you know, it's okay. All right, fine. Well, you know, I mean, I even told you, like, look, if you don't have time to show up to other podcasts, let's just try to do one hostful a week.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't want to put any pressure on you, and I knew that this other stuff was really important. So I was like, no pressure. Just come in when, you know, if you like today you came to Broken Bells because you wanted to go to that one. Great.
I was available, yeah.
Yeah, you were available and you liked those guys.
I was able to push an audition and
stuff, know,
yeah.
But don't feel pressure to come to any of them. But if we can at least just do one hostful a week. And even a lot of times that's hard to, you know, that's hard to do. And so I guess, and I say all this stuff because I love you so much.
Yeah.
And you, both of you guys are like, you know, like little brothers to me.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why sometimes I kind of get the, come on, guys, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like, and this is getting to a much broader issue, and please feel free to criticize me as much as you want. I feel like it's a piece of a larger issue.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's a piece of a larger issue where you don't want to accept responsibility for things, or you have an aversion to responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times when I see you in what I've seen you in situations where you've had to accept responsibility, you don't like it.
Yeah.
You get skeeved out by it.
Yeah, yeah.
And Matt and I were talking, and we were like, Jonah, I've never seen Jonah so happy as he's been lately. And I was like, yeah, because he doesn't really, you know, like he goes on a couple auditions a week, but other than that, there aren't really any huge responsibilities that you, like you get to sort of like, oh, travel if you want or have fun. Is that accurate or is that not accurate?
No, I've been working probably more now. I just don't have a job. I mean, I've been like getting together with and writing and then like having like weekly meetings.
Writing?
Yeah.
Well, this is
But like
great.
Writing stuff for like, you know, like me and like Sean O'Connor are getting together and writing like an idea for a show or, you know, this and that. And it's, you know, I'm happy right now because I'm doing the stuff that I want to do. That's what's making me happy. It's not the lack of responsibility.
Good.
Yeah, I'm a husband. I'm a good husband, and that's a lot of responsibility. You know, that's and you know, I'm doing my best to like navigate what I want to do in my life and still be a, you know, a good friend to all my friends and still be a, I'm trying to, you know, be a good working partner.
I think, and this is something that came up in the conversation with Matt and I feel like at some point you'll probably just not do the podcast anymore. Like you will decide. I want you to do it forever.
Yeah.
But I feel like at a certain point, the priority will be like, oh, well, you know, or you'll get a movie. Well, I mean, you're going to work. You are going to.
Yeah.
You're likable and castable and talented. You are going to get on a show. You're going to get cast in a movie. Something's going to take you away for 3 months or you're going to get busy. And so, you know, maybe there's just a little bit of it that's like, oh, man, I always want to keep the band together.
Well, yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, this, like I said before, this thing is responsible for pretty much all I got. And, you know, and I never intend for it to seem like I don't appreciate it. And when I, you know, when I do bail on stuff, it's you know, I feel I have a reason for it. And it sucks that it's like, you know, I don't mean for you to take it personally or as a slight to the stuff we've done together, but it's more about the idea that like, you know, I feel I'm a nice guy, but I'm also like, you know, we're all selfish and we're all just trying to like, we're all trying to find happiness. And finding happiness is sometimes a very selfish, you know, route.
But I feel like there are times where, I mean, if it wasn't such a pattern, then it wouldn't bother me. Then I'd just be like, oh yeah, you know, this is just sort of a weird anomalous thing.
But no, but I'm saying it is a pattern. These are all the things, all the decisions I've been making have been going towards like a, you know, my idea of what I want to do in my life.
But I think that's fine. I see both sides of this argument as I have all weekend. But I think Chris's thing is more in line with, if you say you're going to be at something,
yeah,
then you be at something.
I feel like, sure, I can't rely on you.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I could rely on you as a friend.
Yeah.
Like if I called you and I was like, Jonah, you know, or like, my dad died, I need to talk. You'd be like, dude,
yeah,
where do you need me? I'll be right there.
Again, Chris?
He died twice. He died twice because my dad's two favorite teams were Alabama and the 49ers.
Understood.
So he turned over twice in his grave.
No.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, when it comes to this kind of stuff, I really do, and not in an insulting way, but I feel like when you say you'll do something, there's a 70% chance that you'll do it, that you'll actually be there. In my head, I go, oh, well, he might show up, but something else might come up. And so there's always a little bit in the back of my mind of like, you know, maybe. And so I just don't like feeling that way. And maybe that's my problem. And I think part of the bigger issue I accept full responsibility for. I worry that maybe I put some things on you that aren't about you. But, you know, right before you got married, I called you in this unsolicited advice call. And I said, look, you know, I know you want to sort of live your life like a 20-year-old drummer, you know.
Yeah.
But you're getting married and, you know, I would love to see you accept responsibility. And I, you know, like, you have so much talent, so much potential. And I just don't want you to waste any of it. Like, just fucking do the things,
yeah.
And, which maybe was a douchey thing to do, but it's just because I love you and I just want you to I just want you to, even if you don't want that part of it's like a dad or like an older brother, like I just want you to get your full potential, you know. And so there are some times where I feel like I see so much of the old me in you, the Peter Hardwick days, where I had such an aversion to responsibility.
Yeah.
And not just responsibility for like, got to do the chores and pay the bills, but emotional responsibility. Like, I think it's why I drank. I didn't want to have to deal with anything. I didn't want to have to accept responsibility for things.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I feel like I see that in you, and maybe that's my bad for projecting that onto you. Maybe that's not the case.
Yeah.
But sometimes it feels like that. Like, we were supposed to record a podcast Monday, and you texted and said, when you were in D.C.?
Boston. I was in Boston. Yeah.
Oh, my Uber got a flat, and I missed my flight. My first thought was, Jonah probably stayed up drinking last night, and he slept in too late, and the car got there with only barely just enough time, because why didn't he just call another Uber and get to the airport?
Yeah.
Was that what happened or no?
No, that's not what happened.
Okay, good.
The Uber got a flat in the tunnel. And the guy got a flat. He's like, I got to wait for AAA. I said, I'm going to order another Uber.
Okay.
He says, no one's going to pick you up on the side of the road in the tunnel.
Okay.
And I was like, really? And then I just took his word for it, and then he says it shouldn't be too much. And then I also had, I was on Virgin, so in my head I'm like, well, Virgin, it's just at Logan.
But there's only two flights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to be fine.
So I apologize.
Oh, no, no, no. And I totally get.
And you know, the only reason why I thought that is because a couple weeks before, you were like, sober January. And then you went to Denver. And I was like, how was sober January? Yeah. And you're like, eh, it's not, you know. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
out the window.
So I just, I put those things together. And so, okay, it's very clear to me that I'm projecting things onto you that are not all you.
No, and I totally understand that that's, you know, that's, it, you know, it's a random occurrence that that didn't happen. No. You know, that it wasn't the case. But I, you know, I wanted nothing more than to get back into town because I missed Deanna terribly, and we had plans on, like, I was going to get from the airport and go and pick her up for lunch. And, you know, that it's, I was getting real homesick. I was sick the entire time of that thing. That's all, whatever. But, like, the idea that I, you know, didn't want to get back, or I made it so I didn't end up getting that on that flight, you know, it wasn't, nothing was on purpose.
Well, I, as I'm talking to you, I think what I'm sort of realizing is that, my failing with you as a friend is that I don't hang out with you enough as a friend. Like, Matt and I went to dinner the other night.
Oh, I heard.
And we were out of town.
Sounded real nice.
And no, it was really great. And it sort of made me realize, like, and this happened with Furman too.
Yeah.
Is our friendship became.
Turned into a workship.
Turned into a workship.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I only ever, and it's not intentional, it's just, you know, you get busy and
yeah, and then the only time we interact is
when it's like, and in your head you check the box and go, oh well, I saw that guy, I saw him, I saw my friend.
Yeah.
But it's all work, and maybe it's even wrong that we're discussing this on the podcast and not just as friends. So,
listen, we need an episode to go up tomorrow.
But you know, as far as my conscious mind is concerned, I don't ever do anything with any malcontent.
No, I don't think you do.
We don't think you're malicious.
Not in the slightest. I don't think there's a mean. I don't think there's a mean bone in your body. But
what about this one, asshole?
I think that was
just a fucking worst joke.
But I do think that, you know, that there is.
One. It's right next to the funny bone.
I do think that some of the chaos that happens though is probably. There, you know, like the whatever seeds you sow is what will blossom.
Yeah.
And so some, you know, sometimes I feel like, oh yeah, well, that thing got chaotic because, you know, Jonah wasn't accepting responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe what I should do is hang out with you more as a friend to understand, like, oh yes, well, this, you know, the auditions and the acting are something you've been doing for a year and a half, 2 years, not 6 months. Or to understand, like, you know, oh, you are doing all this writing stuff, and you are, like, just, that's my fault. That's my fault for not spending more time.
Well, you know, I try not to talk about, like, that stuff. Like, you know, I still have a kind of a weird thing of just, like, I don't like talking about auditions. I don't like talking about.
Talk about it until you get it, kind of.
Yeah, you know, I don't like talking about what I'm working on, because I just, like, you know, you hear those, you know, we live in Los Angeles long enough, and you hear those guys. It's like, I was at a coffee shop, there's two guys going, you go in the dance? And I realized they were talking about Sundance. And, like, I just don't
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You go into the dance.
Oh, Atwater.
Fuck you, No,
this
dude,
was Hollywood.
Whoever you are.
Oh, Hollywood.
Atwater's just full of factory workers.
I used to get into this thing with my parents all the time, separately, my mom and my dad, where they'd go, I just got a phone call that you were on a thing, or that you, why didn't you tell me about, like, I don't know, because I feel stupid saying, hey, I want to be on this thing.
Well, my mother didn't even know that I was writing on At Midnight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. try to let them not know when I'm getting paychecks.
Aw, no.
But, yeah, no, I totally get that, not saying, like.
Yeah, and so, you know, I the way I talk, I come off like just this wandering, you know, hipster of just like, hey man, whatever, I'm having a good time. And like, and I am, I'm having a great time, because, you know, this stuff to me is.
What you said to me last night was, it's ruining my vibes.
It's ruining my Zen vibe, man.
What's like, ruining your Zen vibes?
This argument. I become like a.
But take it to the dance.
yeah, exactly. No, I just, you know, like I've said before, and like I said on the, you know, the honestly, the end of the year one, it's I'm making steps in my life to just enjoy the process. And to me, like, this is the reward. This right now, doing this, like the podcast, that's the reward. Getting together and writing with my friend Sean, that's the reward. Mm-hmm. And so, like, every time I do stuff like that, like, it just it feels so good. Like, when I like that, like, I've said it many times on this podcast, like, leaving Rotten Tomatoes to go to WebSoup was the best decision I ever made, and it was all thanks to you. And it was like, it was just like, it made me go, I made this decision. Like, my parents were telling me not to. They were like, don't do it. I had friends going, you know, what are you doing? That's like, it's 8 episodes. This thing is running for a year and a half, like, guaranteed. Yeah. And I said, I'm like, yeah, but it's like, I'll be able to do stuff I want to do. And they were like, what's wrong with you? Fucking, I had friends saying, take responsibility and, like, you know, stick with the guaranteed thing.
And I know that we even talked about, because, you know, like I said the other night, like, when Talking Dead first came up, we offered you the job first.
Yes.
And you took it, and then The Soup came along, and you were like, I gotta go do The Soup. And I remember at the time saying, like,
oh, I didn't know you actually took the job at the Talking
Dead. Yeah, I was like, well, because it was Chris. It was like, you want to write on, it was like, straight up, you want to write on Talking Dead? I was like, of course.
So they were starting the paperwork and everything.
Yeah.
And then it was sort of a last-minute call, like, oh, The Soup.
His problem with that now makes so much more sense to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's what he said before. It was like a history of
But this. Here's the thing, though. Even at that time,
yeah.
I think I even talked to you and I said, look, I'm bummed because I want to work with you, but if The Soup, I said, I probably would do the same thing. I mean, like, I totally get why you would want to go work on The Soup. Now, I know The Soup didn't turn out to be the job that you thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Or we're told it was going to be.
But you didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
You were sort of led to believe, like, you were going to be a staff writer on the show, not having to do the sort of weird digital stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So I was bummed, but I completely understood that decision. Because when you commit to a long-term job, you have to live with that job.
Yeah.
So I totally understand.
Yeah.
I totally understood. Although I just wanted to work. I just wanted
to be. Oh, no, totally. Yeah. And, you know, I was doing my best. When I get into arguments, I like to talk about the situation at hand. I don't like to do the thing where I go, well, it was this time.
I do that.
But, I had tickets to go to, you know, Deanna's sister's wedding in Jamaica, and I left in the, like, a day after I got there to go do the show in D.C. That was booked afterwards. And even right now, Dee's had she's having a screening of her short at Nickelodeon, but I like, and that's been set up for a bit, and then we booked the Sketchfest show, and I like, you know, as much as I would love to be there for her and be her arm candy in this, like, amazing moment where she gets to show everybody this thing she's been working so hard on, I was like, this Nerdist show got booked on this night for a reason, and it's probably immovable because of the craziness that is the Sketchfest. I was like, I'm sorry. And she, you know, it's like, and I feel uneasy bringing that stuff up because it makes it feel like, no, oh, come on, I fucking took out the trash last, you know, I don't, that's what it feels like I'm doing. But
I don't think it feels that way.
But there, like, yeah, there are times where I've, like, you know, like, put stuff away and, you know, put stuff to the side and.
So you just ball it up real tight and don't deal with it until it becomes too big for you to handle.
I don't know. You know, just like Chris, and Chris knows, like, this on our conversation, he says, like, it's like, you don't want confrontation.
There's a lot that happens with this show, I mean, like, because we're three individual people who have to do, we all have to live our lives.
Yeah.
That's a problem, seemingly, sometimes. We all have to be, you know, we commit to these certain things, like this show on February 8th. Yeah. Come see us at the Merchant Marine Theater.
but also, well, I think the show's...
The 7th, sorry.
It's pretty much sold out.
Oh, well, then come, like, see me the next earlier. Night at the Eureka.
Oh, by the last 20 tickets. But I do think that the other weird thing about the podcast is that it doesn't feel like a job, because it really just feels like, oh, yeah, we just sort of... Like, there's no real structure. There's not a company that says clock in and clock out and come.
And it's not like we applied. It's not like we like auditioned to get this.
That's right.
It was just that it was like we were tinkering in the garage.
Yeah.
Like you said, let's start a band.
Yeah.
We made songs and it's gone.
Yeah.
It's just gone. And so it's, you know, there's still a bit of that left in it.
Yeah, but I mean, it was really Jonah that started to speed up the drum beat, and that's how we got that thing you did.
Side note. I just got my Tom Hanks edition of That Thing You Do, 2.5 hours, a much better version, feels shorter.
Anyway, back to us.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's been an interesting. We've had our moments.
Well, because I think what happens, and again, this is a failing of not hanging out more regularly and having just conversations. Just
yeah, you don't even know what that was like. We got that phone call from you of like, yeah, you want to get dinner? What the fuck is going on here?
There is a bit of fear when Chris Hardwick.
No, but he's like, you want to go get dinner? And I'm like, yeah. What do you want to meet there? He's like, no, I'll pick you up. What's your address? I was like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, I know. I'm just not. I'm a bad hanger outer.
No,
because
no,
I just
fine.
I normally when I get free time, I'm like, I just kind of want to like just zone out and kind of stare at the ceiling.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know?
No. Yeah, we get
the same thing. Like, you know, you and you're like very similar. Like every time like we talk about it,
yeah,
it's like, you know, it's like she's like, I just want to stare at a wall. It's like I don't even want you around.
That's what,
like,
that's what those reality shows are for me, a fucking wall.
But I feel like, you know, what I was saying is that when little things happen along the way, and then it sort of all comes out at once, like, and then there was this time, and then there was this time, and then there was this time. It's really just built up. I mean, it's just like, you know, imagine just like Pez candy just building down the neck of a, you know, and then. When it starts, and then most of it you forget about, but emotionally you never forget about
things. Well, it's like ice buildup on your Mark I Iron Man suit. You're just not going to be able to fly anymore.
And so,
welcome to the Nerdist.
When you start talking about it, when I start talking about it, it's like, oh, and then that thing bummed me out, and this thing bummed me out. So I know it probably feels like a full frontal assault of this thing and this thing and this thing and this thing, but it's really just shit I should have said.
Yeah,
when stuff happened, and not like, oh, I don't want to.
Well, and also
that
you
was
have
the
like
mark
a,
too. Sorry,
you know, you have a like a you have a quick reaction, and I
what the
know
fuck are you talking about
exactly. But you react quickly, and you know, like with passion. That's that a little bit of Italian in you, I guess. It's like you just react in passion, and I'm like this guy that like you know like we talked about before, where it's when I was in like relationships and the girl's like upset at me, I go, oh, here we go, this is it,
yeah,
it's all coming to. And so like when you get angry at me, I like take it all on and go, fuck, what am I gonna do? Chris is gonna this is it, and then like. That's and I got to learn to be better at that. I got to learn to be better at just like not completely being so sensitive and going. It's like, oh, you know, and I know for a fact that like it's always a few days later, and then like we like talk again, and then it kind of like, you know.
Well, it's fine because I think I even told you on the phone, like, look, this isn't anything that's going to affect how I feel about you or our friendship. Yeah. I'm just upset about it now, and I don't feel like. You know, I wasn't like, what the fuck, you goddamn fucking cocksucker. But I know that I have a very intense mode. I have a very intense mode, which I know is off-putting to Chloe too, and or anyone that it happens at, and so and it's not, it's weird, it's not like yelling and it's not like being psychotic, but it's definitely like it's an intense like, what, why would you do this,
yeah.
It's, and it, I mean it feels like, I'm sure it feels aggressive on the other side of it, and
you're
so
a pussy.
But what I no you're not you're not a pussy, it's well, I don't think anyone would enjoy
fucking
that, but
tiger.
But I think, but you know, later on, what happens with me is that, you know, we have this confrontation, and I call Matt like, I don't know, was I crazy or am I wrong or what's going on? And
then I have to say, I see both of your sides,
which I'm sure is valid.
Real political.
And
it's
so
very true.
I be Switzerland. And so I said,
do you want to put any money in me?
I later that night I texted you because I was like, you know what, I know Jonah hates confrontation, and we had a confrontation. And I know he feels bad. I hope he's okay. I hope, you know, like I worried about you. So I texted you. I was like, hey man, I just want to make sure you're okay. You know, like for me, I just need to sort of get stuff out. And then once I get it out, I'm fine. Like then I go, okay, well, we got this all out on the table. I probably could find a better way of, you know, of getting it out into the world. But I'm a poor liar and I'm a bad faker.
Yeah.
So it just is like, nothing's wrong. Like, then I'd sound passive aggressive. So, you know, I am sorry. I also just felt like, you know, the production was, you know, Bart, our booker, was in New Jersey at his wife's grandmother's birthday. And, you know, like, I don't know. I just feel
better than a birthday than a funeral.
That's true. Yeah.
I called Bart too. Cause even like the week before I was on the phone with Bart, like he was like, I need a third. And we were talking about like, cause I really, like, you know, you do an audition, you're just like, well, I haven't heard anything. Oh, well, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, so we're talking about who the third would be. I was giving him a bunch of ideas and names, and we had a good conversation about it. And I felt bad. So that's like because of that conversation, I knew that he was even strapped for, you know, a third at that point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then I called him afterwards, and I was just like, hey, man, I'm sorry for the man. He's like, you know, but it's Bart.
Oh, Bart's totally.
Yeah, like, it's okay,
hey,
man.
Fine, man. It's cool.
You just hear fish in the background.
Bart's, hey, why don't we get so-and-so on the show? And he goes, yeah, I saw them bomb at the improv once. Like, it's just like, it could be anybody. And yeah, the way he says it, you can be like, all right.
Yeah.
That makes sense, Bart.
But yeah. No, it was a... it was a bummer to miss it. And also just like, you know, just... like the people on Twitter being very angry and mean about it.
Were they?
Yeah.
That you weren't on the show?
Yeah.
DVR.
I was on the DVR like feed.
Says Jonah Ram. Sure.
And I was like, I just thought you were supposed to be on. What the fuck's wrong with you? Like,
oh yeah. Well, I got a couple of those. Like, why didn't you have Jonah do? Like, why didn't I have you?
Yeah,
do the show?
Yeah. No, exactly. And you know, and I, it's as much as I missed it, and I like, I'm bummed I missed it. Just like that, like, you know, that day. Or did I tell you anything? Like when I did that thing on the league, when I did that scene in the league,
yeah,
where it's like that day of just like kind of just like working on the scene and like doing a good job and like and that stuff was like, it was really fulfilling and it was really like it's really like fun to me and it's really like it gets me off. So it's
so the shoot was I mean it. When I wrote on your Instagram page, it was not meant to be aggressive.
God damn it.
I thought I was being funny.
I couldn't tell, and it, like it kind of just yeah.
I mean, you can't tell really.
It's text.
Well, yeah. I mean, you were being funny to the 13,000 people that followed Jonah, but to the three of us,
there
that
was more
big.
Yeah, Jonah posted a picture of yourself and Jerry Stahl and Bobcat and Marin and at the shoot, and I wrote, "That's weird. You were supposed to be on our show last night."
Yeah.
And I just. I don't know. I guess it was, in retrospect, it was very bad timing. It was very, very, very bad timing. Yeah. It looked like it was fun.
Oh, it was really cool. You know, I'm playing, like, I'm in four scenes throughout the show. I'm guy at a record store that kind of is at odds with him. And then he comes in and we get into a lot more of like an argument, but then he needs me to protect him from somebody. So he like invites me over to it. It's just like, you know, playing a record store dick. It was the, you know, just let's just say 10 years of my life was spent.
You know, what's weird and fucked up about me is that a part of my brain wanted you to say, well, I won't do the Marin thing. I will come do At Midnight because I committed to that. And then I immediately would have said, no, you should go do that thing. Like, it's almost like I wanted to feel like you would have honored the commitment no matter what.
Yeah.
And then once I heard that, I would have, because if I was somehow able to guilt you into not, which is a very bad tactic, but if I was somehow able to guilt you into not taking that and doing our show, I would have felt like a really huge piece of shit.
Well, and you know me, it's like, you know, it's a weird feeling where it's like if we were to kind of like cut and paste or like make everything like cut dry, like it's like, you know, that was like an opportune for like business. That was like a good thing for my acting business.
Yeah.
And but like it, my first thought when I realized that the fucking days were the same was like, my first thought wasn't like, oh, I'm going to miss out on being on At Midnight. It wasn't that at all. My first thought was like, oh, I'm going to like bum out my friend. it was that, and that's you know, that's the trouble with doing this kind of stuff is that everything gets weaved together so much that it's sometimes hard to see, you know.
Well, it's not hard. It's very easy to.
That's all the time we have, Chris.
Oh, sorry.
So there's a door back here.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Tissues are right there.
Good to see you guys. It's really easy to see how people who don't have good coping or communication skills overall.
Yeah.
How things fall apart, or how bands break up, or how... Come on, guys.
Someone open the exit only. Don't worry about it. No, Kyle, that makes it louder.
Ew.
Kyle just beat the shit out of those dudes. He's our silent tiger.
don't worry
but,
about it.
But I think it's so easy to see why, you know, schisms form and get wider and wider and wider when people just don't have the ability to just sit down and go, hey. Because I think it's important to remember, and this is something that I've said to Chloe before, like when we fight about stuff or we bicker, which is 100% of the time after midnight.
Yeah.
We're going to sugar lug and shout. you have to remember, like, well, what's the overall goal? Yeah. Is my goal to make sure that I keep this person in my life? Is my goal to make sure that I care about these people?
Yeah.
And so when you ask that question, you go, well, yes, of course it is. Then you go, all right, well, let's figure this out. Like, as opposed to just being emotional, yeah, which is what I do right away a lot of the time. How, like, what's really, like, how can I really sort of negotiate this and work this out? And like, I know your goal isn't to fuck me over or be, you know, or be mean or whatever. You have your things and I have my things. And so then we go, okay, well, fine. We had a little thing. We had a little tiff, but it doesn't mean everything. And we can just talk it out. I feel this way. You feel that way. Some points we'll agree on. Other points we won't agree on. But ultimately, the stability of the relationship is intact because, you know, it's like they put the buildings on rollers for earthquake. It's like the building just needs to absorb a little bit of shock.
Yeah. The shit will get broken, but it won't be irreparable.
It's not going to... Yeah, exactly. It's just... spackle that shit.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's definitely... You know, it's funny because, you know, earlier today we did the Broken Bells podcast and we still hadn't talked and, like, I was already in there. You walked in. We started right away. But it was right afterwards where I was like, fuck, like, it's like, you know, like... Because I was still in my head. I was like, what's going to happen? I don't know. It's, you know, am I going to... Like, you know, I didn't know if I was going to get... I didn't not booted, but you know what I mean. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I was real scared all day.
I'm sorry you had to feel that way.
No, it's just that's me. You know, I'm a sky's falling kind of guy sometimes when I'm like, you know, like
sky falls.
Yes.
God damn it. As he says with his Daniel Craig Adidas.
Yeah. And you want to know how we can see him? Because he has his feet on the fucking table we record on all the time.
Well, I mean, this isn't really for me. Go ahead, guys.
but you know, like I'm funnier around you guys. Like, I'm like I've gotten funnier from being with you guys and doing this. And it's like, I've like, you know, I've figured out more of who I am because of being around you guys. And like, it's like, that was all going through my head when we were just like, you know, we just jumped right back into it.
Yeah.
And it was, like I said before, the doing the stuff is the end goal for me. Like, just doing it was what is great.
Well, I don't hold grudges because I find grudges to be horribly inefficient.
Mm-hmm. I love them.
They're emotionally inefficient and they're time-wise inefficient.
Yeah.
Because they don't solve anything. A grudge solves literally nothing.
Yeah.
It's just like, I have this extra energy that I'm expending on this thing. Am I going to, you know, if it's a kind of thing where someone's done something so horrible.
But what if they don't know that you're holding the grudge?
Well, then I think that might fall into the category of your problem. I mean, I feel like, you know, it's, and I want to feel good with people and I don't like having things with people. I don't even like having things with people that I don't even care for.
Yeah.
I don't like having things with people.
Yeah.
Right.
Forget about people that I adore, like you guys. I just don't like knowing that that's out in the world. And so, you know, if someone who's really shitty to me then turned around and just said, you know what? Yeah, I don't know. I was having a bad day and I'm really sorry. I will instantly go, hey, no worries.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it happens. It happens online all the time where someone will say something shitty and then go, you know, I didn't mean that. And I'll go, hey, you know, everyone has a moment, whatever. It's fine. I don't, it's cool.
Yeah. I'm very much the same way where it's, you know, like, you know, Deanna would be sometimes like, it's like, oh, the fucking, what an asshole. And I was like, oh, you know, they're probably just having a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like real always quick to like,
what's
and
that
even
like?
With you and like, I was, you know, like stuff like where like, I'll get, you know, angry at you or something like that. And then I'll go, but like, and I like, and then you do that thing of like acceptance. You know, you go, well, that's like, but that's the way Chris does stuff, and it's just clashing with me, and it has nothing to do with his thing being wrong or my thing being wrong. It's just that it's just like it's just they just clash for some reason.
Yeah.
It's just chemical makeup. It's just like, you know, sometimes when you see people that get into a relation with each other, and it's like they're like screaming at each other. You're like, that guy doesn't normally scream at people. She's usually so quiet, and
what
it's
are
like,
you
but it's the chemical
about?
Makeup that sometimes.
Well, you know, imagine, and any relationship, you know. romantic relationship or a friendship relationship.
Workship.
A workship. But, you know, you're essentially the longer that you're in, that someone's in your life, you're essentially sort of like digging deeper and deeper and deeper under the layers and under the layers. And then at a certain point, you sort of clash.
Yeah.
And so what that creates is, I think it's sort of like dynamite opening up the lower layers.
Yeah.
You know, because that's just, we both want something and we're not agreeing on what that thing is right now.
Yeah.
But in the process of figuring it out and solving it, we're opening up so many more layers and gaining a better understanding about each other.
Yeah.
And becoming better friends. Definitely. Not that you should go out of your way to fight with people all the time.
Well, yeah. But, it's pretty cool.
But yeah. but if you can handle those things are going to happen. And so when they do, if you really can use it as a learning experience and a growth experience of it, then, you know, it does strengthen your
friendships. Well, I believe it was Katy Perry who said, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger."
She's the one that said that?
Yeah.
She's the one.
She wrote that.
Did she also write "She's the One"?
Yes. Under the assumption of M. Night Shyamalan's pen name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Still got that cough.
I do.
So why did you go out drinking and smoking Tuesday night?
Brian Quinn was in town.
Oh, okay. Well, enough said.
I mean, you gotta go out with Q. He's in town. He was doing Conan last night.
Please stop smoking. Please stop smoking.
Listen.
You had a cold.
I was off it, but have I had one since Tuesday night? The answer is no.
You haven't?
I haven't.
Please don't anymore.
It's not good for this cough.
It's not good for your fucking life.
That's what you say.
Don't deflect it with snarky humor.
I say it's relaxed.
It's a very serious thing.
As I said before, by the time it's a problem.
It is a problem.
They can 3D print new lungs.
They're not going to 3D print you a lung, Matthew.
Yes, they will. I can get whatever I want written on it. It's going
to
be
no one's going to be able to see it.
Yeah, it's all right. God knows. God.
Who?
God.
Godfrey Jones?
No, my doctor, God. Dr. God.
Dr. Godfrey Jones.
Well, yes.
Yeah,
he's your doctor too?
No, I don't fucking go that guy.
Oh, Dr. Jones is a great doctor.
Dr. Jones, lady.
No time for love. shut up.
He just, it was like a tick. Like,
it was just so, just by rote. Yeah, you come.
No time for love. No, get it. Short round.
It sounds like fortune cookie.
Yeah. So I went out and we had quite an evening. And then I got to work the next morning, probably still drunk.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow. But had a good show.
We did have a good show.
Well, yeah.
We did have a good show. But I
got to write down the words Granny Glover. Mm. You'll know if you saw the
what
episode.
What is?
But yeah, anyway. But back to the fact that the three of us have to deal with the whole fact that there's three of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. It's like we were just kind of grumbling, and who was it? Like Kumail was like, "You guys are like Metallica."
And I was saying how we should do some kind of monster, and then hand someone $1 million contract to be the next Jonah.
But I don't think any of us.
You're gonna Jason Newsted it. I'm telling you.
You're the Lars Ulrich. You'd be the Lars.
Oh, great! I love art.
Because I feel like you would be the one that would hold the grudge the longest.
Of course I would. What are you talking about?
I mean,
have grudges that have gone for 7.5 years.
It's not worth
that
it.
People
man.
Don't have any idea.
It's not worth
I'm
it.
I'm trying to be Kirk Hammett. That's what I want. That guy just seemed so mellow.
Wasn't he the cool? He was just Hetfield was awesome too.
Yeah, Hetfield was really cool.
Cool guys.
But like what's that? Who had that story? Was it you that had that story?
Well, it was Tony Thaxton.
Tony Thaxton has a story about like Kirk Hammett. Where he's like, it's at a festival and he gets up with his guitar and he sits on the back of a golf cart.
Yeah.
And then the guy like goes forward real fast and he almost like falls off. And then he says,
"Hey man, cool it. I almost fell off."
like, I'm in Metallica.
Yeah, exactly. But then you think about what if that happened to Lars? Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Well, and again, even the fact that you can tell that story and you know what that guy is like is a testament to the fact that, you know, this thing that we do together is amazing. It's like it's so insane that we get to. And I know that you love it because you both text me and go, "I can't believe we just got to hang out and like talk to that person." And this is unbelievable. And you know, but it is the sum total of our efforts that yield those. Those are the seeds that we planted that yield this type of fruit.
But you don't feel a little resentment that we're not there all the time? I feel like you probably
I don't feel resentment because I feel like I know that's just the deal.
Yeah.
You have a job and you have stuff you're doing, and, and I know that...
We used to build it around our schedules back when we only did one a week.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if you know, if we drop back down to you know just one a week,
yeah.
But I sort of feel like what I kind of came to accept was this is just how it works. And you guys,
well, I don't like that it works like that.
But you can.
I know that theoretically I could go and show up at all of them, no problem whatsoever. But I also have a fucking job. Or I'm writing for your show.
Yeah.
Which is like, I always feel like, oh, I want to go do this thing, but I can't.
But that's
a
luxury problem. You can't go to one job because you have another sweet job.
Yeah, it's a luxury problem, but this I feel a responsibility to this show, as well as I feel a responsibility to that writer's room and being there for those guys.
I think the hostfuls are the ones to really prioritize because...
Well, yeah, you can't do them without all three of us.
I know. But what I feel like, what these things have become is just this really special bubble to me. When I first started them, I just thought...
You thought no one would ever want to hear the three of us.
I thought no one would ever want to hear them because I was placing so much value on the celebrity guest.
Well, you know what's funny is originally it was just going to be the three of us. And then you're like, well, let's just have a guest on. Even Tom Lennon, I remember like we had no intention of having him on. You're like, it's like, it would just be like the three of us talking about stuff. I was like, you know, let's have like Tom Lennon on like a guest. And then it just kind of became.
Oh, and then it became the thing.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, what I'm sort of noticing is that these are the episodes where that people respond to the most because, you know, when we have a guest on, we don't know them that well. And, you know, you sort of talk and you can kind of. You find a nice groove because we have enough runway to find the groove.
I'll accidentally insult them. It's great.
But, but you know, there isn't years of friendship that you can draw from to really get to, you know, to really peel back a lot. So, you know, if people subscribe to the podcast and they see someone that they, oh, I don't know who that person is or I don't like that guest or whatever, then they might not listen. But what I realize is the one thing that binds all of the subscribers of the podcast together is the three of us because we're the podcast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I just feel like it's really important. I would love to continue the same thing we were doing before. Show up to the ones you can show up to if you want.
Yeah.
But let's just really try to make time, you know, 1 hour a week if we can to do these. And, you know, if you have to go away for a few months, we can bank a few or...
No, like you said before, once, like, you know, like I could Skype in and it'd be a kind of a fun thing. You know?
But, you know, one of the things that Jonah pointed out, too, when we first started having the conversation like a year ago when you're like, it's getting tough for me.
Yeah. Well, it's something we've always sort of known in the back of our heads was going
to
happen.
But Jonah said to me, he made an excellent point, which is like, he said, look... You'll have guests on, and I don't know half of these people, and you have a lot to say, and I don't have as much to say, so I feel like I'm just kind of there, not really contributing anything. And if I'm not going to be contributing anything, then I, you know, like I think my time is probably better spent pursuing the things that I care about. And I said, well, that's a really tough point to argue. You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because there's times sometimes where I'm like, oh, I'll go because I, you know, I'm able to and I want to.
Is there any part of you that finds the having to deal with us as other people that have to be involved with this thing? Is there any part of you that goes, that'd be a lot easier without those two?
No, not at all. I think it's just different flavors. I think, you know, like I love that you were Broken Bells today. You know, like that was it's. There are more. Sometimes they're one-on-one, and that's just the flavor of that podcast. I don't ever feel like I'm just really glad Matt and Jonah aren't here. I never think that. I always want you guys there, but I know that sometimes it's not possible, so I just do it solo. And that's just a, you know, I have the equation in my head of, all right, well. You know, Christina Ricci's going to do the podcast. She can only do it on this day at this time. Well, Matt and Jonah can't go. Yeah. So,
So
what's the alternative? I don't have her on the podcast? Yeah. Well, I want her on the podcast. So, you know, so
start
that's
a
why.
New,
that's,
start a new podcast.
If we didn't have the hostfuls.
Like Conan's interview.
If we didn't have the hostfuls, it would be really, I would have a problem with it.
Yeah.
Because then I at least feel like, you know, you guys are the, you know, you're all the stuff that holds it all together. So that's why, you know, like some are a little more interviewee and some are a little more, you know, more like that.
Did you notice that people, oh, at least I haven't seen it as much as I used to. When we do live shows, people don't ask who the guest is anymore.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. No one's asked that for San Francisco.
That's right. Because they don't fucking care.
There are going to be guests for San Francisco. It's their surprise.
Even to us.
I don't know. I think I know who it is.
I don't know.
Hmm. So, yeah, I always want you at the podcast because truthfully, it can be a little nerve-wracking for me.
Sure.
As 500 times, I've done this so many times.
Yeah.
But there's still a thing in my head where I go, what if I run out of things to talk about? I don't have my friends with me to offer their insights.
Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, like if you hadn't been at Broken Bells today, I don't know. I mean, it's just I know you're a fan of theirs and you have so much music knowledge that I don't have.
Yeah.
That I worry about being, or like with you and making sure it was important that you were there with Buzz Aldrin or Mike Massimino or, you know, guys, not only, and it's also really fun for me. It's no fun to do things alone. I love collaborating. I love getting in a room with people. I love kicking jokes around. It's not, I don't like doing stuff alone. I would way prefer to have other people there because it's also exciting for me to see how excited you guys get over some of the people that we have on.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like when I travel, and I know when you feel the same way when you travel, and like Chloe's not with me or Dee's not with you, and you go, oh man, fuck, I wish, because you're not sharing it. Like in the end, we should all be sharing this shit together. And so that makes it more fun for me.
Yeah. No, definitely.
I love getting those texts where you guys are, can't believe that we got to, you know, meet someone talk to someone or like, this is technically a job.
Yeah.
I mean, Jonah and I, always think of that Metallica one when fucking Hetfield said, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we just looked at each other. We were just like, oh my God. Why does he say that in life?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's it's a blast, and even you know with this all the hostels we've done since New Year's have been
real deep.
Like,
well,
no,
I don't
but
know.
I'm really digging them. Like, it's like deep is, I mean, everything should be deep.
Oh yeah,
everything should be deep.
No,
but like we've like told great stories. I didn't know any of those stories, but either of you, motherfuckers. Yeah.
I've relaxed a lot about stuff. I had this really, I guess I sort of had this idea where it was like, you know, no, people want jokes, they want kind of, and then I realized that it's sort of like being in a relationship, and at a certain point, you just want to talk to that person as a person. And you're like, yeah, no, I get it. You're funny. You can juggle. I get it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But who are you? Like, what? Who are you? You know.
For the record, everybody, Chris can juggle.
And I feel like that's really important. And also, just so you guys know, all the podcasts since the end of the year, last one, I've been kind of going, who am I? Like, discovering more things about myself. And also,
I don't like it.
Being more comfortable and just not caring as much what people think, which is a lovely feeling.
It's great.
It's a lovely feeling. Now, most of the time, I'm still going to be super upbeat in my life because that's just, those are the seeds that I want to sow because that, you know, has an effect. You know, other times I get cranky, like in the writer's meeting yesterday. But it's never, but my crankiness is never like, shut the fuck up. It's just like, all right.
I don't know. It's sometimes like a little shut the fuck
up. I don't say shut the fuck up.
I didn't say anything. The whole meeting. I didn't say anything the whole meeting.
That's not true.
Oh, it is true.
Matthew, that's not true.
This, like a real Matt
this happened
in this
12
situation.
Minutes. This happened 12 minutes into the writer's meeting. And all I said was, yeah, that would work, but we still need a cold open. Just saying it to the room. Just saying it to the room to get everybody thinking about a cold open. And then this motherfucker.
My finger is in wagging position.
It is.
Tell them what you said. You don't even remember, do you?
I think I said something like, Matt, please, give it a rest.
Yep.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
That's so
exactly
just so,
what
just
he
so
said.
You guys know, it was the third or fourth thing Matt had said.
Bullshit.
Matt has this way of sniping comments out.
It's true.
And I'm a very good sniper, yes.
You sniped three or four comments out that were sort of like, one of them was like, oh, thanks for showing up. It was just stuff like that.
Oh, thanks for showing up. Bullshit. I didn't say that to you.
It wasn't that. It was something like that. It was something chidey. You said like three or four chidey things that were...
Oh, I was ribbing you a bit.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
I do remember now.
So
I do remember now.
In a small way, I was really rooting for the underdog in this situation.
At a certain point...
I do remember now. But had I said something ribbingly... and you had said that, it would not have registered in my brain. The fact that I just said something totally script-related, and you snapped like that, that I was like,
we were trying to solve another problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were dismissive of the thing we're doing, like, that's great, but we still have to have a cold open. It's like, yeah, I know. We will get there. Sometimes, you know, sometimes running a room means that you have to be a little bit of a kind of a dickhead teacher where you're like, guys, we have to focus. Because if people start, you know, doing that thing that comedians do, it's like, you'll make a comment, someone else will make a comment, someone else will add something on that, and then we've just wasted 10 minutes. And so sometimes it sucks to have to be the person to drive the room, and if you don't kind of get a little authoritative sometimes, like, if I'm soft about that and I'm like, hey, can we please, then everyone's gonna, so there just has to be a little bit of like, hey, we gotta focus. And I said,
we still need a cold open. End of the sentence. Wasn't going to say another word. Then fucko over here.
How did you say it, though?
Like he said before, though.
How did
like
you say it? You didn't just go, guys, we really need a cold open. It was like, great. We still need a cold open.
But also, like you said,
because that's the first thing in the script. We should get that fucking out of the
way. I know, Matt, but the tonality of how you said it was kind of a little disrespectful.
But just like before, what Chris was saying, it wasn't this thing as much as it was those other things you said. It was just the last one. It was the last slot got filled up, and then there was the reaction.
That's exactly. I remember when Marilyn Manson came on The Talking Dead. And at a certain point, it was just like, if I don't shut this down, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And so I just felt like I had to be like, hey, I know we have to get a cold open, but we have to solve this other problem first. So, Matt, give it a rest.
It's not... Listen, you remember it one way.
Matt, I love you, but you're portraying your side of like, all I said was we need to do the... And you didn't say it that way. It was in the very snarky kind of like... Meh. Like, there are a little bit of teeth with the way that you comment on things sometimes. It's not just...
As same with you.
It's same with me. You shut the fuck up.
No, but like we were saying earlier, it's like, you have that, because it's just...
So there was teeth
yes,
on
but I have
coming
to,
out of your mouth fast.
But I have to run the room, of a room full of 20 people. So it was just like, let's solve this first. Just give that a rest. Those were the quickest words I could get out to squash that so that we could solve the problem, because we had two scripts to get through. That's all that was.
I didn't know you were in a shitty mood. I thought the ribbing was, appropriate for our normal ribberies.
Well, it, yeah.
We had a conversation about that recently.
What?
Like, where I, like I made a joke.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, you, like, it was, like, a joke. Same joke we made from, like a week before. But, you reacted poorly. And I was like, oh, fuck. I fucked up.
Oh, no.
And then you talked about, you're like, I just walked in. I just had a stressful day. And I was like,
yeah, I was just stressed out from the day. And, you out of nowhere there was kind of like the you're Chloe's dad's age or something. I was like, please not right now.
Oh, I know not to do that.
And
But it was like, I was like so shittily trying to play my case. I was like, but it's just like a joke we all made before.
And I said to you, you know what, that's fine, but there are sometimes, and I think you even said that D had the same sort of thing. It's like, just give me a second to get out of the other thing that I just came from before. Because it feels like a cold slap. Like, now we're like, in play mode.
Because my first thing is always just making a shitty joke. Like, that's like the,
mine is too.
Yeah.
Call me Dr. Jones. So shitty at jokes.
No, you're good at jokes. Sometimes there's a timing that just is like, oh, but we're focusing on this other thing, and that's not helping us get to where we need to get to. Which is to just finish this script or get this thing done. So, I wasn't trying to bum you out. I was just, I felt...
Well, I was just illustrating an instance where I felt a little like, whoa, what did I do?
No, I know, Matt, but you know that there are things that come out of the side of your mouth that are snipey. Where that are like...
Yeah, but you're not supposed to totally hear that.
I know I've created it.
Did you think that was better?
I'm kidding. I've opened a new grudge case. I'm totally kidding.
Grudge case.
No, I don't hold a grudge against you.
Well, that's good.
There's a lot of people I hold grudges against, though.
I know.
Some people who have podcasts on our network that I hold grudges
against. At the end of the day, I think it's just important to know and at least agree that we all have the same goal, which is
make Chris as famous as possible so we can grab those coattails.
It's too... Did you ever see, like, once Will Wheaton on Twitter says, I want a drawing of Chris with the long Tom Baker Doctor Who scarf.
Yeah.
But with Jonah writing it.
Oh, who said that?
It was Will Wheaton.
Aww.
And then, like, I retweeted it saying, I told you guys they weren't coattails.
You don't really feel that way, do you?
No, not at all.
Oh, good.
No.
You don't feel that way, do you?
What?
No, I don't. Coattails is just, you know, just, no, you give opportunities.
Yeah. I mean,
if we were both comics.
If we were, like, shitty at whatever our, you know, like, good. If I were shitty at.
Well, I try to tell people, they're like, oh, really? Around this. I was like, you know, it's not like, I mean, me and Chris were just doing it at the same time. And then, like when that's what happens in scenes where, like, you know, like, your friend in comedy starts, you know, going up, and then he helps out the guys.
It's just putting more eyes on so that people can see that you, because let's be honest. You guys are funnier than I am on this fucking podcast.
Well, no, we just are. We say that because you have to drive the ship.
I appreciate that you're saying that.
We're there to joke snipe.
I appreciate that.
Sometimes he gets mad about it.
No, but it's appropriate here, not when we're trying to finish a script. But you know what? I'm totally fine with that. I am so fine with that. But I just hope, you know, I hope that we will continue to be able to do these until it's just physically not possible anymore.
With technology,
guys,
I think with holograms...
I have some bad news.
What?
Chris is quitting.
Oh, no.
Sorry, guys.
Hey, the Matt Jones Show.
I thought it would be better if Matt told you.
Yeah. Was it that Ben Folds song? Like, the band broke up in May and then in June reformed without me?
Oh, bummer. I think we gotta wrap it up. You have to get to Meltdown, Katie, right?
You don't have to. You just leave it. You're good. We'll keep talking.
But ultimately, I adore you guys, and I love you to pieces, and you're like family to me. And, you know, I just I'm glad that we could just talk it out, and at least. And I know maybe it's shitty to do it on the podcast and not do it off, but one of the reasons that I want to do it on the podcast is because I want people to learn from it that. You can have a thing with someone and you can just fucking talk about it and it can be okay.
So I, like, you know, that's what I always say about friends is that, you know,
which Joey was the funniest, like,
unsung. No, like, but with with friendship and friends, it's a
Matt, give it a rest.
You know, that, like, they mean a little bit more than family because it's you choose to keep on hanging out after you've had it out with each other.
Yeah.
With family, you're just kind of stuck through blood. But with friendship, it's like you can call someone a piece of shit and then you just go and get, you know, lunch with them the next day.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. They come back.
Well, and
what if they don't come back, Jonah?
And it was never meant to be.
Interesting.
I will make more of an effort to hang out as friends and not in work situations.
That's
like, hey, let's just go grab some dinner. Let's go get some coffee.
You know me, I love
it. It was amazing. It was like, I don't think we've hung out not on the road in... I don't even know.
I'll tell you all the ideas that I've been working on.
You should.
Yeah.
Don't. He'll steal them.
I've never stolen anything.
Uh-huh. I seem to remember At Midnight was hosted by Tom Lennon.
Okay. I ripped the show away from Tom Lennon's greedy mitts because they were too busy typing every script in Hollywood ever.
We wrote a thing. I don't know if we're going to use it, but I wrote a thing today for a walk-on for Tom and Ben. On Monday, we're doing a state reunion.
Oh, so fuck, really?
We're gonna Mike Black, Mike Showalter, and Carrie Kenny Silver.
And I wrote David Wayne's in town, too.
What?
I think David Wayne's in town.
Oh, David? Oh, we should get Wayne on, too.
Okay. But here's the thing I wrote for Ben and Tom. I have them coming in gold tuxedos.
Oh, funny.
With just money falling out everywhere. And then they get confused, like, what's going on with the show? And then they turn and they see Mike, and Carrie. And they assume that the state is still on.
Oh, that's funny.
And that it's a shitty game show sketch. And they leave to go get their 15 years of checks.
That's funny.
That's really funny.
Ben Grant going to be a Tom guest on the Live Jonah Radio at San Francisco Sketch Fest February 8th.
Nice.
Nice.
With house band The Manx.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's and February 8th. That's
Last
Saturday.
Weekend Video, the Cinecave.
Where are you doing? Where's the show?
Last Weekend Video, the Cinecave.
Oh, that's a place. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's okay. In the Mission. It's like a really awesome video store, but downstairs they have a performance space.
That's right.
So Ben Garant, I'm going to ask him about the fact that he is the first person I ever saw on TV wearing a Cramps shirt.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
What other shows are you doing at Sketchfest?
I'm doing our show, and then the next day I'm doing at 10 p.m. at the Eureka Theater. Tom Lennon and Matt Meyer present One Star.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is a show we did once at the UCB Theater about 3 years ago, and we decided to try it one more time. It's essentially dramatic readings of one-star reviews from Yelp, done as though it is Ken Burns' Civil War documentary.
Oh, I better steal that for At Midnight. Yeah. Yelp, that's right up our alley.
It is right up our alley.
Fucking right up our alley. We're doing the podcast Friday night, and then Saturday day we're doing a live reading of a Sanjay and Craig episode.
That's right, and Will or Chris is going up too, right? I think one of them.
I think they're both.
Are they both going up?
I don't know if they're both going up. I know
one of them's going up.
No, Jim and Jay are going. I'm not 100% sure who's going. But yeah. Malik Pancholi will be there, and I don't know who else is going to be up. I'm not even sure which episode we're doing, but Sanjay and Craig is super. It's a super fun show, and
yeah, it's
and so we're going to do a live reading of that, and then I'm hosting the screening of Revenge of the Nerds with the cast.
That's right.
And then I'm that night. The reason I can't do One Star is because I'm doing Bring the Rock.
It's all right. Bring the Rock's good. And you can't do One Star because you're doing.
No, you just didn't ask me. That's what
I'm doing. Oh, great. You're on the show. You're on the show.
One Star.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, you're on. I don't know. I don't have anything else.
Great. I'll see you at 10. Just added to One Star. Comedian Jonah Ray.
Yeah.
Great.
Cool.
It's gonna be. It should be a good little weekend.
He might cancel on you.
Oh,
I'm kidding.
We've learned literally nothing from this hour.
What?
Yeah.
God, this
good.
Fucking
good shot though. Good. Good.
Yeah.
Now who's
feel
sniping.
Like a big man.
Now who's sniping?
Kicked a guy when he was vulnerable.
Now you're just gonna drink it up and miss the cab over to the Eureka Theater.
Let me lap up your soul juices.
Yeah.
Right. Guys, we have a lot of fun here, and Jonah hates when I say that. So
actually, it worked out nicely because it was the end.
And continue to enjoy your burrito.
I guess. I mean, for as long as we're still doing the show,
we're gonna do the show as long as
we're still doing it.
We can. All right. The end.
But if you'd like to replace Jonah, send a headshot.
I mean, why a headshot? It's a fucking audio podcast.
That's exactly what makes it ridiculous.
Okay, all right.
I'm a joke sniper.
All right.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.